This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports, The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN, New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. I have a bunch of topics to get to this morning, and of course, I welcome your thoughts and comments and observations as we range far and wide on issues of the past couple of weeks. Now, for starters, I had a vigorous amount of feedback on my interview last Sunday with Steve Callis and our discussion regarding Little League Baseball and how its popularity seems to be dwindling in terms of enrollment numbers over the last several years. And I want to revisit this concern a little bit again this morning. I also want to update you on the growing concern about the lack of civility at high school sporting events. I fear this is a trend that is getting worse. There were recent media reports from California over the last couple of weeks about racist taunting at two different high school soccer playoff games. Most disturbing, and suggests that this may be a growing national concern about how our teenagers really need to be taught and educated more strongly about appropriate behavior when they attend high school games. These latest incidents, by the way, are strongly similar to what happened not too long ago at Pearl River High School and at Our Lady of Lourdes High School during recent high school basketball games. And then I want to talk a little about March Madness and the sports psychology that goes into how college basketball teams are able to pull off major upsets of big-time programs. And I want to focus in particular on how the St. Peter's men's team was able to upend John Calipari and his University of Kentucky team, and of course their big win last night over Murray State. There was something that Shaheen Holloway did down the stretch of that Kentucky game that caught my eye. And I want to share that observation with you. Clearly, Holloway is a different kind of coach, one who seems to keep everything in perspective. Okay, 877-337-6666, that's our number. Of course, I encourage you to give a call in. Let's start this morning by continuing to chat about Little League Baseball and its declining numbers. Now, let's put this in perspective. Just like pretty much everything in life, sports in this country goes through ups and downs and go through, you know, fads of popularity. If you look at the history books, there was a time about 100 years ago when the most popular sports in America were boxing, college football, cycling, and baseball was just beginning to take off. All the other sports at that time were either very small in terms of the number of players or their popularity. But in the 1920s, thanks to stars like Babe Ruth in particular, baseball began to grow and grow. And since baseball is relatively inexpensive to play, I mean, kids just need, you know, a beat-up glove and some taped-up bats and balls, the sport back then was affordable at the youth levels. And in those days, the kids pretty much learned the game on their own. Or they learned the game from the older kids in their neighborhood or from their older brothers. This, of course, was the beginning of Sandlot Baseball, where kids used their own creative ideas to make baseball work for them. If they didn't have 18 players, and that was pretty rare back in those days in terms of a neighborhood, they adapted the game to how many kids did show up to play, and they used whatever field they could find to adapt to play their game. But most importantly, all the kids on the Sandlot, they all played. They all got up to hit and hit a lot. They learned how to catch fly balls, how to throw strikes, and so on and so forth. This simple approach, that of kids being active and learning how to play baseball, fueled its growth and the sport's popularity. Now, Little League Baseball started in the 1940s, and it started to formalize and organize these youth Sandlot games in pretty much every town in America. And for the last 60 or 70 years, Little League Baseball has become a national mainstay for our youngsters. It's a, as I say, it's a rite of passage for young athletes. But now these days, as we all know, baseball isn't the only game in town. Its popularity has been challenged by such fast-moving sports like basketball, lacrosse, soccer, and so on. Sports that tend to reflect the times in which we live, which is clearly much more focused on a faster pace, more instant gratification, and what have you. In short, our kids like quick-paced sports, which explains why video gaming has boomed in terms of its popularity. In contrast, unfortunately, Little League Baseball still plods along with a pace that is anything but fast. And there are other concerns as well, but to me, that's most likely the biggest concern. And the question is, can youth baseball and Little League Baseball somehow find a way to make their sport attractive to kids? I'm not even talking about the impact these days of travel baseball teams, which, as we know, siphon off the better players, or the concerns about arm injuries in kids, or the growing disparity of youngsters needing to come from wealthy families in order to afford to play ball. I'm just focusing on how Little League coaches can find a way to teach the game so it's more attractive. Again, 877-337-6666, because most of the feedback I got from last week's show talked about the fact that there have to be some real sort of proactive changes. And I think the biggest concern, quite frankly, is that baseball may be and probably is the most difficult sport of them all to learn how to play. You have to develop all sorts of skills to play the game, and mastering those skills, well, it takes a lot of time and a lot of practice, and there's a lot of frustration involved. And by the way, there are still some towns in the United States where Little League Baseball continues to be strong and still flourishes. But the truth is, in most towns, the numbers each spring continue to decline. That's something that Steve Callis and I talked about last Sunday, and that's a national trend. Furthermore, when kids see their buddies, their friends, quitting baseball to do some other sport, well, that has a sort of a peer pressure impact. Those kids are then strongly tempted to leave the sport as well. And now that we're finally entering into springtime, I really think coaches and parents who grew up in baseball and want their kids to play the sport really need to finally sit down and think hard about how to keep the game moving quickly so the kids remain engaged. Now, again, I really think the time has come to really focus on how the game is taught to kids. I don't think we can ever expect any help from Major League Baseball on this issue. That's not really their main point of interest, especially now that they spent so much time trying to get the game, the Major League game, back on track through the lockout. And, of course, most of us have never really had to worry about or do any marketing or selling of the game of baseball to the next generation of kids. Why? Because we didn't have to. But as I said, times have changed. And the most basic part of the game is to keep the action moving. We need more hitting, more running the bases, more fielding, more everything. We got to keep the kids involved, keep them busy, keep them understanding that baseball is comprised of a lot of different skills, but the best games of baseball are the ones that are quick, fast-paced, and kids are on their toes all the time. So, dads and coaches, let me be candid. At the younger levels of baseball, Little League, that ever, you know, up until maybe 9 or 10, you do the pitching. you're the one that goes out in the mound and throws strikes to little kids. Again, up until the age of 9 or 10, when the kids can actually be consistent and throw strikes on their own. Because remember, at the young ages, kids are absolutely terrified of being hit by a pitch in the game. So why scare them even more by having one of their peers try to pitch to them? Practices? Look, you got to avoid boring batting practice sessions where just one kid hits and the others just go and shag balls in the outfield. Can't do that. That's just brutal. That's like punishment for kids. Coaches, you got to put together an organized practice session where there are at least four or five or six different workstations in which different skills of the game are taught to the kids. You have to need a bunch of assistant coaches to do this with you, to do it in a very, very clipped and very organized way. One workstation could be on how to field a ball properly. Another one is how to catch a pop-up the right way, especially if it's sunny out. A lot of kids today just don't know how to use their glove to shield the sun when they're trying to catch a pop-up or fly ball. Another workstation is how to really teach them a batting stance, the basics of hitting a baseball. And, you know, on and on. Each practice stop, by the way, should be no more than 5 or 10 minutes in length. Keep a stopwatch with you. At the end of the segment, you know, blow the whistle and have the kids rotate onto the next workstation. But keep the kids moving around. You know, have them, if you have to divide them up into like groups of four or five, that's great. But keep the action moving. And emphasize teaching and instruction of all the skills. At this level, you don't even worry about playing a game because, quite frankly, they don't have the skills yet to learn how to play a baseball game. You just want to get them feeling like good about they're learning the basics of how to play the sport. Okay, I mean, and by the way, sometime in the next few weeks, I do plan to revisit the growing push for this national movement for Save the Game. That is the great idea that came from Kevin Gallagher's terrific book on how to teach youngsters how to hit. And as you might imagine, a lot of baseball folks agree with Kevin's premise, and that if baseball is to survive, we need to start taking the game back to its basics. Again, Save the Game, that's a topic I will come back to down the road. All right, let me take a break. When I come back, I want to talk more about Little League Baseball, want to talk about March Madness, talk about racial taunting, and so much more. 877-337-6666. Talking about March Madness and dancing. Before we get to our calls about Little League Baseball, let me give you a couple of quick March Madness notes. Did you happen to see the UNC-Baylor game yesterday? Baylor was down by 25 points in the second half, came back, tied the game, and the contest went into overtime before Baylor lost. The star of the game, University of North Carolina's point guard R.J. Davis, who scored a career-high 30 points. R.J. is out of Stepanak High School in White Plains, is the proud son of Robert and Vanessa Davis. Robert, his dad, well, he scored 2,118 points. This was back before there was a three-point shot from 1982 to 86 at Mercy College. And Robert still holds the school's career scoring record. Now, Robert was at Mercy when I was there coaching baseball. And trust me, I saw him play. And the dad was the real deal on the basketball court. And it looks like Robert taught his son RJ quite well when it comes to scoring hoops. And speaking of March Madness, how about St. Peter's knocking off both Kentucky and Murray State? You know, I mentioned at the top of the show, there's real sports psychology that goes into how college basketball teams are able to pull off major upsets of big-time programs. And I something happened in the game against Kentucky that really caught my eye. When things started to get very tight towards the end of the game, when Kentucky was putting together a furious rally to catch up, the camera focused on Coach Holloway and what he was doing when his players gathered around him during a key timeout late in the game. Holloway was smiling. That's it. He was just smiling at his team in a very positive and very confident way. There was no screaming, no yelling, no gesturing. It was just a moment of serene confidence that Coach Holloway was trying to spread to his players. In effect, that if I'm the head coach and I'm smiling and I'm feeling confident, then you, the players, should feel the same way. It was a message of relaxation to just go out and play your game. It was a point of getting his kids to calm down, play their game, and finish the contest with confidence. And that's just what they did. I was amazed. It was so different from most, you know, frantic situations where the coach grabs a clipboard and starts scribbling on plays and the kids are trying to find out what's going on. It's loud. It's distracting. No, Holloway, he just said, we're just going to relax, play our game. I've coached you guys well. And in effect, Shaheen Holloway, he knows the true power of a confident smile, because it basically empowers your players to take a deep breath, relax, and go out and finish the game. That's something to take away. Holloway is obviously a new breed, a different kind of coach. And obviously, we've all seen that he's worked his kids to the highest levels. Okay, let's go to our calls. Let's start with Tim in Eastchester. Tim, good morning. You're first up on the fan this morning.
Hey, good morning, Coach.
Yeah.
Coach, first and foremost, let's localize this conversation. How about the Westchester Mount Vernon City Knights? Yes, New York State basketball champions.
The Mount Vernon High School basketball team, the boys basketball team, has such an illustrious history, Tim, of, you know, going undefeated. They've done it so many times. They're always considered to be one of the premier, if not the premier, basketball program in the state. So obviously they won again last night, another state championship. Congratulations to them.
Yes, and Bob Cimino, coach. Coach, there has to be a 30 for 30 segment somewhere, because the illustrious history of this city is incredible. It's got to be something out there. And as I was telling the gentleman who takes the call, I wish I had the wherewithal and the money to produce it myself, because I would put every dime I had into the story, because it's a story that needs to be told.
Well, Bob Cimino is obviously just a terrific coach. His record speaks for itself, and the legion of players that come out of Mount Vernon to go on to play college ball, and in some cases, many of them going to play pro ball. It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary.
Absolutely. And Coach, so, and March Madness, guess what? Everybody knows who St. Pete's is now. You know? I mean, I tell you, this, like, you could keep the World Series, you can keep the Super Bowl, give me my March Madness. It's the biggest and the best high of the year for me. And, like, your gentleman who takes the call says, it's not just one game, it's a couple of weeks, and you really can get into it, and so it's a great time of the year.
Well, I got to tell you, first of all, and the gentleman who takes the calls, that is, of course, the lovable Ed Arzuman, who just has so many fans and followers. He is terrific, and you know, we're all indebted to Ed for making the show, you know, available on the air and doing a great job and talking to the callers. And so, Tim, thank you for that. And you know, I will say this. Let's put this perspective. Yeah, these are kids. These are college kids. These are not professional athletes. These are college kids who obviously are lucky enough to have their team qualify to get into to March Madness. The St. Peter's story, I mean, it's a school of, what, 3,000 students in Jersey City. I think the entire men's basketball program, I think I read somewhere, generates about $1.5 million in revenue. Put that in perspective, Coach Calipari at Kentucky, his salary alone is $9 million. That's his base. So you can see this is sort of a David Goliath situation, but clearly Holloway has just done remarkable things with his kids, and now they're forced to be reckoned with. I mean, you know, Kentucky, you know about Kentucky, Murray State is a great team as well, and St. Peter's led the entire game. I mean, this is a really, really tenacious, dogged team, and we'll see what happens next week when they play closer to home in Philadelphia. Let's continue with our calls. Let's go over to Ed Ward in Elizabeth. Ed, good morning. You're on the fan.
Go Peacock, baby.
Yes, I hear you.
You know what? You know what's amazing about this? And I remember, I'm sure you know, remember Eddie Ford, the scout?
Of course.
He was Mr. Jersey City. He loved, he was pro St. Peter's and all that stuff. Unfortunately, he passed away a while back, but I'm sure he's smiling up in his grave right now with that big wad of tobacco in his mouth.
Yeah.
You know, because he's the St. Peter's fan. But I want to talk about the Little League situation.
Yeah.
It's a twofold thing with me. It comes down to the coaching, number one. You got to keep it organized. And it was funny. My brother, who lives in Florida, is coaching his son in in Little League Baseball. And he asked me for some drills, and I told him, you got to keep it moving. What they do is this. They'll practice for an hour and a half. But here's what they'll do. Do 30 minutes of drill work hitting, but three stations for 10 minutes. Then they do fielding for a half hour, three stations for 10 minutes. And they'll even work on base running.
Yep.
So they keep it moving. And you know what? From what my brother told me, because the kids will look forward to practice because they're keeping busy and all that stuff.
Correct.
But, you know, the another thing, too, with that, Rick, is, you know, you're looking for quality coaching and all that stuff. And in today's society, a lot of your quality coaches don't want to coach because, to be honest, the parents, a lot of the parents are nuts.
Well,
I'm being realistic, coach. And, you know, and there's guys that have been veteran coaches for 35 years. All they want to do is coach Little League. They're getting out of it because of that.
Yeah, I thought you were going to tell me that it's hard to find good coaches at the youth level, which is also a big issue as well. And of course, the parents, we know they can be more than overbearing. But yeah, it's to teach kids the right way to play the game. And if somebody, as we all know, it's a complicated game. You really do need to have coaches, whether they're parents, as volunteering, whatever, or getting high school varsity players to come out and help. But they gotta have the kids learn from people who actually know how to play the game of baseball. Otherwise, it's just not going to work. And yeah, what they do in Florida and other warm climates, yeah, that's exactly right. The kids come to baseball practice and they know for an hour and a half at young ages they're going to be working hard. They're going to be doing this drill, that drill. They're going to find themselves enjoying it because they're getting a sense of being taught well and they're mastering some skills, and eventually they'll get to start playing in the games. But you got to start from the ground level and really teach the kids. I just fear that, unfortunately, in too many towns these days, because there aren't that many good coaches, they don't understand how to teach the game. They assume the kids know how to play the game instinctively, and that's not the way it is, Ed. You know that.
Well, you know, here's a great story. I was asked about 10 years ago, go speak to Little League, speak to coaches about, you know, how to run a practice and all that stuff. So I asked them, I said, how many coaches are in your Little League? And they said 32. So what I did was I made 32 packets, you know, with different drills and all that stuff. How about the day I go to speak? Only four coaches are there. I mean, that's embarrassing to the league and all that stuff. You know, the director was very apologetic. But, you know, here I am. I'm not asking for a dime. I'm willing to help out and all that stuff. But the interest in the coaches, they didn't want to be there. You know, and then that's it.
It's sad. It's as simple as that. Hey, let me take some more calls. Thank you for your thoughts, as always. You know, we're talking about Little League. And we're talking about, you know, what St. Peter's head coach Shaheen Holloway does well. But let me just share with you very quickly, at the other end of the college coaching spectrum, what in the world is going on with the baseball program at the University of San Francisco? This is just hard to believe, but according to ESPN, a major lawsuit has been filed against that university and the NCAA by at least three baseball players at University of San Francisco because of the behavior and verbal abuse by the head coach and the assistant coach. Now, the assistant coach was fired a few months ago, and the head coach was fired just last week. But in the essence of the lawsuit is three former players, all identified as John Doe's, described varying forms of abuse and described a culture in which, and this is really bizarre, it was, quote, it was normal to see the former assistant coach Troy Nakamura to walk out on the field naked or in a window, making obscene gestures, even while the entire team and the head coach watched. This was unbelievable. Now, John Doe 1 alleges that the head coach, Nino Girentano, referred to him using several expletives and repeatedly berated him in an attempt to pressure him to leave the program, probably because he had a four-year guaranteed scholarship. This player entered the transfer portal in January. John Doe number 2 outlined a pattern of verbal and emotional abuse that resulted in 5 emergency room visits in the fall of 2021, which contributed to his decision to leave the school. John Doe number 3 said the head coach told him he was a waste of space that none of his teammates or coaches liked him, and that, quote, I wish I could take my bat and hit your head as hard as I can, and maybe I can get your brain to work, unquote, according to the lawsuit. I mean, the lawsuit alleges that the NCAA and the University of San Francisco breached their contractual obligations as outlined in the NCAA Division I manual on numerous grounds, including a failure to prohibit sexual harassment or sexual abuse of student-athletes by athletics department personnel. The lawsuit also says that several players have become suicidal because of these coaches' behavior and so on. I mean, this is just bizarre. But clearly, we can see that when you get some really good coaches, like a Holloway, unfortunately, at the other end, there's some strange things going on as well. All right, let's continue on with our calls. Let's go to Ralph in Manhattan. Hey, Ralph, good morning. You're on the Fan.
That's pretty shocking, Rick. San Francisco is so PC that it's pretty shocking that would happen there. But, you know, baseball is so intricate. It's set apart from the other sport. You brought up something very, very specific about the fear factor that baseball entails. You know, when you're standing up to a pitched ball, you could get clocked any time.
Sure.
And that fear factor, when instilled in this kid at an early age by these kids that can't really have any control at that age, is something they'll carry with them forever. I coached for many years. I made sure I threw batting practice, or my coach threw batting practice. I didn't have these kids throw batting practice and have kids standing out in the outfield twiddling their thumbs, not knowing what the hell to do, because this is what makes baseball not very desirable for the youngster these days. You see these kids literally, Rick, standing in the outfield for minutes on end with no action whatsoever, and they have to be saying to themselves, I can do something better with my time. With all the choices they have,
yes,
they have to be saying, I can do many, many things other than, you know, just standing out here doing absolutely, you know, watching the grass grow, you know? This is the way it goes on.
Ralph, I couldn't agree with you more, and I think that's exactly what goes on. Kids are, by the time they are 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, they begin to say, you know, I have a lot of other friends who are doing other sports that are a lot more attractive, a lot more exciting than my being sort of banished to spend an hour and a half in the sunshine in the outfield doing nothing. I think that's a real concern. And until our youth programs and Little League programs understand that, and understand that you got to have the game be full of action. The kids at a young age, as you mentioned, they are just so worried and terrified by getting hit by a pitch. It scares them. That's not a good thing. So yeah, have the dads go out and pitch to the kids when they're young and Little League games. Dads have the ability to control how they throw strikes. The kids will make contact. There will be action around the diamond. There will be kids, you know, running, fielding, making plays. That's what baseball needs. That's how you build a sense of confidence and enjoyment with these kids for the next generation. The question is, as we know, is if we've now lost the next generation of players, they just don't care about baseball anymore. It's really at a critical stage. All right, let me take a quick timeout. When I come back, I want to talk a little more about these latest incidents of racial taunting, because again, this is disturbing. It's getting to be really a national concern. 877-337-6666. Okay, first of all, you can always check out my website at AskCoachWolf.com, and you can always follow me on Twitter at AskCoachWolf. Now, I mentioned at the top of the show that there was another ugly incident involving racial taunting at a couple of high schools. Now, of course, we've talked about the Pearl River High School racial taunting incident, and also when Austin and the high school girls basketball team was playing at Our Lady of Lourdes. Here are a couple more at a high school soccer playoff game out in California. The student who heckled black and Latina soccer players during a high school championship game in Northern California with racist taunts has been identified as being held accountable, according to school officials. The student made monkey noises and gestures as a black girl on the Buchanan High School team prepared to take a penalty kick during the Division I Northern California girls soccer game against Oak Ridge High School. Before that, the same student had barked at a Latina soccer player during her penalty kick, according to various sources. Of note is that the Oak Ridge team, which of course the players did nothing wrong, they actually made it a point to apologize to the Buchanan soccer players after the game, a game that Oak Ridge actually had won. And also note is that the Oak Ridge High School, whose student body is close to 70% white, has apparently made headlines in the past for harassing students of color. According, that comes from the Sacramento Bee. Back about 5-6 years ago, during a girls' playoff basketball team against McClatchy High School, racial taunts were directed at McClatchy's Asian American players. Now, the principal at Oak Ridge High School has said that the offending student at the high school soccer game will be fully disciplined, but what that discipline will be has not been revealed. So it seems to me that, again, this is a particular school, Oak Ridge High School, which has a history of these kinds of problems, then maybe more should be done to educate their students than just a quote of a discipline, whatever that means, a punishment. And then in another situation out in California, at a boys' high school soccer playoff game, Sanger High School, they went to Concord, California to take on De La Salle High School, which is a private Catholic high school. De La Salle won the soccer match. But fans in the crowd reportedly made demeaning comments to the largely Hispanic Sanger High School players, stuff like mowing the grass and wanting burritos and that the team's players should learn how to speak English. Now, after the game, De La Salle's principal sent a formal letter of apology, but from what I can tell, that's about all they're going to do. So again, all these incidents which are beginning to bubble up, I think the bigger issue here is whether these things are symptoms of an underlying concern about kids today not knowing, the kids, not the parents, the kids not knowing how to behave when they attend a high school sporting event, especially at a time where we like to think we have made some progress in terms of sensitivity to different cultures and ethnic backgrounds in our society. And I'm also concerned as part of this is discipline. What is a discipline? What's the punishment that's going to be handed down? Quite frankly, if there is no accountability, if there is no punishment, then what's to prevent a kid from or their peers from doing this again? This is really baffling to me. 877-337-6666. Let's go to Jack Smithlin over in Fairlawn. Hey, good morning, Jack. What do you think about all this?
Well, Rick, I think you know how I think about this. I get very passionate about this. Before I get started, I just want to say, and it actually is on topic. I coach at the college level at New Jersey City University, and we are a program that believes in the holistic part of the being you as a person first, you as a student second, and you as a student athlete third. And, you know, that comes right from the top, right from our AD, Sean Tucker, to Jeff Jordan, who was an assistant, right down to our coach, Ashley Martinez. Mm-hmm. And we played a team yesterday from New York City, Baruch College. They were 6-0. We're 1-9 before yesterday. And we just received an email from the coach from Baruch saying that they've never played in such a good setting. They've never played in such a place where the kids were solid people, complimenting, helping people when they fell down. And that all comes from the top of our program. And when people see this and people hear this, you know, I'm so proud to be part of this program. And I was at a program, you know, that was not opposite, but run by coaches that, you know, put fear in their players, like these coaches out in San Francisco. These people are just sick. I mean, I can't imagine that at the highest level of our NCAA baseball that we have coaches that can do things like that. It's just hard to believe that this happens.
This is a Division I program, University of San Francisco. And you know, we're still, of course, it's an alleged, these are alleged situations against these coaches, but the president of the college has now said, you know, well, we'll have to fire these coaches. We need some new leadership because, yeah, this is hard to believe. Now, again, I'm glad you mentioned about the Baruch coach. I mean, they had an undefeated season going, and they lost two to New Jersey City University. So, I mean, the fact that they actually, the coach reached out and said, you know, thank you for basically being a good, solid program, that's pretty unusual in this day and age.
It really is. And, you know, when you think about that and you relate it to these kids in the stands, not understanding that, you know, what this can cause and what it does to people. You know, I'm a strong believer. I remember a saying that I hung over my desk that, you know, people will forget what you said and they'll forget what you did, but they'll never, ever forget how you made them feel.
Right.
And when you walk off of a field being put down, being people being racist against you, being prejudiced or bigoted, it's the most amazing, worst feeling you can ever imagine in your lifetime. Because you know what? You do take it personal, and it is personal. And the problem with today, Rick, like you said, all these different incidents and a slap on the hand and an apology. You know what? An apology means absolutely nothing unless something's done about it.
Correct.
You know, the people that do this have to be reprimanded, and they have to be put in a situation where they fear ever doing it again. And I'm not a strong believer in teaching by fear. I worked with a coach that taught by fear. I don't want that. I will never, ever do that. We love our players. Our players love us. Why don't we just understand with what's happening in the world today that peace is the best way? Peace is the best solution.
And to tie this back into Shaheen Holloway, I mean, coming down the stretch in front of a national television audience against the University of Kentucky, you know, they're trying to cling to that lead against Kentucky, and there's Holloway, big smile on his face, happy, enjoying the moment, and obviously getting his kids. There's no fear being pushed on his players. There's no sense of intimidation. There's no yelling or screaming. He's basically trying to add a moment of serenity to his team to say, look, this is great. We're doing terrific. Just keep doing what you're doing. I'm confident you can do this. I mean, it was so unusual, Jack, to see this in this hectic day and age of win at all cost. It was refreshing.
Do you remember the movie Draft Day?
Yes.
When they showed the clip of Joe Montana driving for the game-winning touchdown 85 yards away with about a minute, less than a minute to go, and he comes into the huddle, and everybody's, oh, my God, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And he says, hey, isn't that John Candy about four rows up? And they all looked at him like, what the hell are you talking about? What are you talking about? He said, yeah, look at him. He's there. He's sitting. He's smiling. He's having a good time. And they just, you could see how they all just relaxed. Like,
yes,
oh, my God,
of
here's
course.
Our quarterback. A big deal. That's the way we need to coach today. Listen, I'm a strong believer in a happy employee is a productive employee. A happy player is a productive player. And at New Jersey City University, we love our game. Hey, listen, we were 1-9 before yesterday. We beat a team that was 6-0. And you know what? We're going to still struggle. But you know what? We're going to be happy when we do it.
That's the way things have to be.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Thank you, Jack. Appreciate the call as always. Let's continue with our calls. Let's go to Bob up in Schenectady. Good morning, Bob. You're next up on the fan.
Good morning, Rick. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Bob?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Want to get back to the Little League.
Yes.
One disclaimer, if you're going to pitch batting practice to the kids, make sure you use an L screen.
Oh.
I was watching the footwork for 10-year-olds, and my son hit one right back into my eye. So that was not really good. Yeah, we made it, though. So that's one thing. Make sure you use an L screen.
Well, Bob, let me just say that, yes, even you're tossing BP to little ones, the ones that make contact, they hit the ball hard with pretty good velocity. An L screen is an excellent suggestion because, it's just there was a time when L screens were sort of few and far between. But nowadays, you go to any Little League field, they should be there. And quite frankly, you owe it to yourself if you're throwing batting practice. You owe it to your own health to go out there and make sure the L screen is right there in front of you where you're throwing the pitches to the kids.
Absolutely. I looked like Rocky Balboa afterwards. My eye was completely shut.
God.
But anyways, what my son did play Little League, and it got to the point where the coaches from each team were going at it because it was that competitive.
Yep.
So we left the Little League. He started playing travel ball. I work a second job because, you know, these travel teams are $3,000, and then
course.
You have to travel.
Yeah.
So then he ran across this situation. We went to a travel tournament in New Jersey, and the coach brought some other kids along that weren't even on the team for the whole year. And then, you know, some kids wound up sitting. So my son eventually said, you know what, Dad, you work too hard for your money for me to play. And he brought these other kids to play, and I didn't even get to play one game. And so he's now doesn't even play anymore. He's an outstanding lefty pitcher, and I'm beside myself. I'll work 24 hours, 7 days a week so he can play baseball, and he came across this experience that really soured him. So now he doesn't even play at all.
How old is your son?
He's going to be 17 this year. He's an excellent little lefty pitcher.
Does he play high school?
I don't know. Yeah, he plays high school. He did. He's all done now.
Jeez, I mean, and that's the issue, Bob, because quite frankly, as you said, he was doing great, and then he got involved in a travel program where he didn't play much, and as you said, it just ruined his confidence. It soured him, and he said, you know, I don't need this, and what could have been a very, very wonderful baseball career just went south because of the way the travel program just sort of dismissed him, like, we're not interested in having you play much. And that's
no, he had one of the highest baseball IQs on the team. The coach even called me and said, what's going on? I didn't have the heart to tell him why he's not playing anymore. Even his varsity coach called me and said, why isn't he playing? And I said, well, I don't know why. He just doesn't want to do it, but he eats, sleeps, and breathes baseball.
Well, maybe the time has come to have one more chat with your son and just say, look, can you sort of articulate as to why you don't want to play? Because obviously you have some talent, and there was a time, and you obviously love baseball, but what's holding you back from going out in the field? And if he tells you that it was because of that experience with the travel program, well, get him to talk about it. Maybe if he expresses his angst and worries and anxieties, maybe that'll get him back on the right track again. But, you know, the clock is ticking, as you well know, so let's try that approach. Bob, good luck. Thank you for chiming in this morning. I got to take on another call. In fact, let's go to Nick over in New Jersey. Hey, Nick. Good morning. You're on the fan.
Hi, Coach.
Hi, Nick.
Coach, I coached in the Little League when my son played, but I'm going back 35 years ago.
Okay.
When he first went in. Now, when I was coached in the 50s and played sports, you know, we were taught a lot of fundamentals. I mean, really driven. But when I went to the Little League, I had to go to a meeting when I first started. Excuse me, Coach. And I watched these coaches. You know, they picked the teams.
Yep.
And I was the new guy, and I watched them. They were setting these teams up. Now, they had been there a long time, these coaches, and they were setting the teams up. They were powerhousing their own teams. And I said, so I got, you know what happened there, Coach. So I got stuck with a couple good kids, but the rest of them really not playing.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't play much sports. So what happened is I said to them, wait a second, aren't we supposed to teach these children? No, it was all about between the coaches. Now, this is 35 years ago. And the parents, I'll tell you, Coach, what an experience. They're yelling at the kids, these coaches. I said to them, you're not coaching the New York Yankees here. You're coaching children. I said, you got to stop treating them. I said, these guys must be eating raw meat. So I used to take my children. And you, like Coach, someone said before about the kids out in the outfield. So what I used to do is take an outfield kid every once in a while, and I'd move him to second base, bring him inside.
Mm-hmm.
But you always had a good pitcher, a good first baseman, a couple good infield. So you could always bring it. And when that kid got into the infield, he was a new child, just for an inning or two. And you know what the fans, my wife said, you know what they were saying? We're going to lose the game. He moved that kid from the outfield into the infield. No, I said, this experience is killing me. They're cursing. And I after my son was done, I said to my wife, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
Of course, I had an argument with the coaches. You know, I'm an old street kid. In fact, Ralph, who calls from Manhattan all the time, used to play sports with me when we were older.
Oh, no, okay, younger than me.
But, and between the coaching, who didn't, and then they get mad at a kid that didn't do well. I say he's not doing well because you're not teaching him well.
Nick, let me offer, and I hear you loud and clear, and I think unfortunately that's the reputation for many, many years the Little League has undergone. Nick, thank you for the call. There's a wonderful classic book called Little League Confidential by Bill Geist when he was coaching his son Willie Geist. Willie Geist, of course, of the Today Show fame. And what it's a funny, funny book about the realities of coaching Little League Baseball over in New Jersey. I heartily recommend it. It's been out for about 20, 25 years. Okay, that's going to do it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks, as always, to the highly popular, highly talented Ed Arzuman. Hey, listen, Mark Melusis, the Moose is up next. I'll see you next Sunday right here on the Sports Edge.
Everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.